For the past several weeks, a nondescript street in Pinellas Park, Florida, provided a backdrop for the political and ethical debate surrounding the fate of Terri Schiavo. The brain-damaged woman lived in a hospice on the street until her death last Thursday, 13 days after a state judge ordered that her feeding tube be removed. NPR's Ari Shapiro covered the story from Pinellas Park. After returning home to Miami, he sent us this reporter's notebook.
We were literally divided, on opposite sides of 102nd Avenue, a narrow street that passes Woodside Hospice before ending at a local elementary school. On one side of the street, the reporters, cameramen, engineers, and sound technicians who were just there to do their jobs. On the other side, the protesters who wanted to see Terri Schiavo's feeding tube reinserted. They came from all over the country and gathered together, surrounded by bright orange plastic fences. They were intensely passionate. Every day they'd pray, recite the rosary, or say mass in groups.
Have mercy on Terri and on the whole world, for the sake of his sorrowful passion.
But as the days went on, the vigil started to get a little more extreme. People showed up in costumes, with musical instruments. One woman beat out Terri's heartbeat on a drum. There was a man who stood outside of the hospice and juggled 7 balls at once, his purpose, if any, unclear. Some people spoke in tongues. One woman wore army fatigues that she'd decorated with gold glitter paint. She'd written Jesus SWAT Team on her chest in brightly colored puff paints. She carried a homemade cross painted red, white, and blue with a baguette and a bottle of water glued onto the front of it, her offering of food and water for Terri Schiavo.
How long you been here?
It was hardly unanimity among the protesters. Some called others wackos. One woman theorized that maybe some of them were possessed by demons. By the time the Reverend Jesse Jackson arrived, the organizers had lost control of some protesters. Just before Jackson's press conference, some protesters wouldn't leave the media pool to make room for the family.
The family sent me out to ask people to step out.
What?
So in other words, you care more about your own agenda than come on, what is the deal?
They were all ostensibly there to support Bob and Mary Schindler, who wanted their daughter's feeding tube reinserted. But when it came time to get the Schindlers' message out to America, some of the protesters seemed more intent on relaying their own messages with signs and megaphones. And although we were right in front of the building where Terri Schiavo was dying, we could have just as easily been in front of a Walmart. The fact that she was a real person, and that this was an intensely painful dispute between her closest loved ones, in which every outcome was horribly difficult, that was all pretty much lost in the hoopla. In the end, the story seemed like some grand tragic opera where there was only one possible ending. And after Schiavo died, finally, everybody had one thing to agree on. She was in a better place. The protesters outside of the hospice said it, Michael Schiavo's lawyer, George Filo, said it, even her parents said it. And then, just as quickly as they'd materialized, the protests and the media circus vanished. The day after Schiavo died, a few satellite trucks stood vigil in front of the medical examiner's office where her autopsy was being performed. But the news cycle had moved on, and the Woodside Hospice faded back into the landscape of 102nd Avenue. Ari Shapiro, NPR News.